Just when you thought it was safe to put away the bozo gene. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Oh, it had to happen one last time on the road, didn't it? Welcome to episode 554 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us as ever. And welcome to the penultimate round of our MotoGP coverage this season. Round number 19, technically 21, I suppose, of MotoGP's 2024 season. Technically, it was 22 races, but we're only going to end up with 20. Yes, 20, not 19. More on that in a minute. Some good news coming out of MotoGP for once, and the world in general, I suppose, and in a biking sense, very shortly. But we'll be talking about MotoGP's Malaysian Grand Prix in this episode. And, well, if you ever wanted a Saturday to define and describe how this MotoGP 2024 season has played out, then Saturday will be a microcosm of it all, and we're going to try and make sense of it over the next half an hour, 40 minutes or so, on this episode of M101. Joining me as ever, Mr. Roger O'Connell. Hello, sir.
Hello. This is the second episode we're recording on Wednesday, November 6, 2024. We riffed a lot about the top, about Trump winning this election, who we are, who we've been. That has not changed in the few minutes since we've recorded this podcast. The good thing is, like, this double recording has done, like, a lot to, like, lift a lot of the immediate feeling of dread off my shoulders. I don't know when that's going to settle back into my body. No. As I think about just, you know, I mean, there was a lot on the line, and for me and a lot of people that I care about, this was really, really tough to swallow. It's tough to swallow for people who have other priorities and things they care about. Again, but we're not, we can't fix all that on our own. What we can do, it's something that I learned at my old desk job when I was working at an undisclosed cell phone company that shall remain nameless, that is Pink. Don't focus on what you can't do. Try and focus on what we can do. We can't fix all the shit by ourselves. What we can do is offer a little bit of escape, talk about motorsport, how much we love it, how much we loathe it sometimes, and this is going to be part of that.
Right on, Mr. O'Connell. And speaking of the community and bringing us together, joining us for what is his 300th appearance on Motorsport 101. Maybe one day I'll finally get that rent. It's Cameron Buckley. Hello, Cam.
You'll get your rent when I get my t-shirt, a-hole.
Fat.
Don't look for that Patreon.
Will that t-shirt say satellite riders don't win championships?
Actually, mine this weekend will just say nobody's perfect, and it's Porsche's championship count this year.
Oh my gosh. Shout out to Only Endurance, who put together the recreation of the nobody's perfect Porsche from Porsche for the 80s to reflect their IMSA and World Endurance Championship seasons across all categories. Top class, even got the Porsche Races North America seal of approval.
Yeah, I actually got the Porsche Motorsport seal of approval. They reposted it today.
That's cool. So, that's very
between
cool.
Between that and the fact that the LMP 2000 ran for the first time in 25 years, and it sounds even better than I'd hoped, this week is like plus 15 Cromer. Minus 3 billion Cromer.
The Nutbuster 5000 in Cameron Buckley's case.
I want a recording of that car so I can fall asleep to it every night. Just right after we get through all the recordings of all the NASCAR teams that were cheating. We don't have enough hard.
Should we talk about it a little bit? We'll talk about it a little bit, because this is actually quite a short set list for an episode, so I don't mind us spending a few minutes on this. The NASCAR elimination race for the Final Four that we all watched together as a family this past weekend, and basically seeing William Byron and Christopher Bell fighting for the final spot in the championship for Ryan Blaney punched his ticket by winning in Martinsville.
Yeah.
He got in automatically because, you know, the playoff rules, winning you're in, etc. There was a last lap overtake by Christopher Bell by riding the wall on the outside of Martinsville. Stop me if you've heard that one before.
Yeah, that's the namesake of our Overtake of the Year award, Golden Melon. But there is a key distinction is that NASCAR immediately said, that was awesome. You can never do that again because that's a safety violation. So after the race, they debated, and they decided Christopher Bell committed a safety violation. They moved him to the tail end of the longest line, and he does not go to the championship four. William Byron does. But there's a catch to it, because multiple drivers, Ross Chastain and Austin Dillon in particular, had an opportunity to overtake William Byron so that Christopher Bell doesn't need to make that last-second overtake to get in anyway. But they just kind of hung back.
Well, you see, RJ, what they did is the little known sequel to NASCAR 06, Total Team Control, where you control other teams as long as they're for the same manufacturer. And, well, they ran 2x2 block behind Byron for like 30 laps and wouldn't let anyone else by. All the meanwhile, Bubba Wallace is talking about a potentially...
They're always ton of talk saying that this is his fucking fault, man.
Is
every time
is carrying a supposed flat tire, which never actually went down, but he ran on the outside of the track long enough and slow enough for Bell to kind of dive bomb him at the final corner, only to then hit the wall. And instead of making an honest attempt to get off of the wall, we get the fail melon instead of the hail melon. It's about three quarters of the hail melon. Everyone involved got big financial penalties. Everyone but Byron here, who is basically the Alonso in the spin gate here of, well, I didn't know what we were going to do. Everyone got financial penalties. Everyone got crew chiefs ejected for the remainder of the season. And then some.
Yeah, they basically Trackhouse, RCR, and 2311, the three teams directly involved in potentially aiding their team or manipulating a race, all had their crew chiefs and spotters and the leaders of their garage all suspended for the final round of the championship this weekend in Phoenix, and all three teams were fined $100,000 as a direct result of that, but no driver bans, which is what people were kind of pushing for in this instance, and didn't actually happen.
Because remember when Spingate happened in Richmond in 2013, they did not hesitate to throw
kill the team.
Mark Truex Jr. out of the chase for the playoffs. That set in motion a chain of events that killed off Michael Waltrip Racing, which at the time was now in the top tier of NASCAR organizations. And 2 years later, they
Yeah, and the thing is, Dre, that was $100,000 for each of the teams, and then $100,000 for each of the drivers. A total of over $500,000 in fines.
I can't remember NASCAR cash penalties being that high normally. That's a huge amount of money.
And this is like, not a deterrent whatsoever. Teams are going to continue to do this. They are laughing at this.
That's not enough. You need to be suspending dudes. And I'm talking drivers for multiple races.
You know what this is? Christopher Bell gave NASCAR an easy out, because the second he pins the throttle coming through four, they don't have to think about like looking into the race manipulation any further than like, yeah, we'll find these dudes and suspend some car chiefs.
Yeah, because
they got their easy out.
Yeah, because Bell did not make an honest attempt, a good faith attempt to get his car off the wall. He hit the wall and he's like, well, is a three-quarter Hail Melon good enough? Floored it.
Let's try it.
Floored it and went around and got the position he needed. Only for NASCAR to then strike it off and move him to the back of the lead lap.
And with Bubba Wallace backing off so much on that last lap, I'm thinking he would have gotten it anyway.
Yeah, I think if he turns it down off the wall, I think he's all right.
Yeah. His mistake was fully committing to the bit when he shouldn't have done.
He played to the whistle. He played to the whistle when he leapt into the guy when he was shooting the three, and for once the foul got called on him.
Flopping.
So we're all in agreement that, like, Tyler Reddick's got to win this championship.
Yes.
Please, God.
Yes. Yeah,
like,
please, God.
We have your team just got bullied by Rick Hendrick. We've got blood, sweat, tears, Penske. And then we've got fuck them kids. And yes. Your three team owners. I love it here. This is the worst.
And once again, I ask, could you please get rid of the playoff system?
No, because they're so far invested into it, they never will.
With a Cyberdyne Systems Model 101, because that sounds like a bot talking.
It must be a bot, apparently, because me having the common sense solution of saying too many variables and too much random shit in motorsport goes on to have a one-and-done, win-and-you're-in-style playoff system for it to be an effective way of determining who the best driver in NASCAR is. Well, once again, the three highest scorers on conventional scoring in this championship this year did not make the final four, and Joey Logano's in the championship four, who's 15th on regular season points this year.
Dog, how crazy would it have been if he actually won that Richmond race?
Well, we will never know, because Austin Dillon committed not only Spygate, but double homicide.
Everybody's blaming Bubba Wallace for this one. It's really Austin Dillon's fault.
It's always Austin Dillon's fault.
It is always Austin Dillon's fault.
He's now, I believe, he's one place in the points behind Corey LaJoie.
Corey LaJoie, who got fired from his ride and got dumped in the worst team, and pretty much, dog, that's embarrassing. What?
Right.
Somehow, guys, before we get into that, I'm not so sure if the Kyle Busch win streak is sticking around.
We shall see. With that in mind, we've got to update a little bit on what we talked about from last week. Of course, if you were here last week, we talked a lot about MotoGP and the horrible flooding situation that was going on in Valencia at the time. Sadly, since then, the death count has risen to 218, with still many dozens more potentially missing, unidentified. They're still trying to work out, through all the infrastructure damage, just how severe the loss of life is. Of course, our continued thoughts and prayers go to everybody affected over in Valencia. It is a horrible tragedy, and that region needs significant support. As I mentioned on last week's show, I mentioned it again here, there's been multiple fundraisers that have been put out there. Aspar, who are based in Valencia, put one out there. It has since reached over 100,000 euros worth of donations since then. Formula E themselves have also put 50,000 euros in there, and also opened up their own GoFundMe to, with any donations matched and going over there as well. Props to Formula E. They actually pulled off their drama test as this podcast is being recorded. But they've also had Valencia very much at the forefront of their minds. They held a minute's silence before their test even started to pay tribute to the victims over there. Please, if you can, please donate and help out if you can. I know it's not easy out there right now, but it's very, very hard for the people of Valencia right now. In that time since we've had Sepang, and obviously a lot of the speculation talk was, well, what's going to happen now? Are we going to get a 20th race this year? Are we going to get a title decider at all? If so, where? Well, Dorna's figured it out, because we are going to get a championship decider at Catalunya over in Barcelona on November 17th, the exact same time slot that we thought it was going to be in. For the original Valencia finale, it's just going to be in Catalunya instead. Second race there for this season. The title will be decided over in Barcelona.
What's instead. The situation like over in Barcelona?
It's not wonderful. They are also under extreme rain alert. There is a lot of risk of rain this weekend. Apparently not as severe as what Valencia has gone through, but still expected to have a very large amount of rainfall over the weekend. So again, stay safe out there. We can only hope and pray on every level that, you know, the city can handle it and the infrastructure can handle what could be coming. We just don't know until it lands. I could only pray that no one is badly affected by what could be about to happen. It's going to be called the Racing for Valencia Grand Prix. Apparently, ticket proceeds from, you can buy tickets right now for this race if you want to go to Barcelona and watch it. A portion of the proceeds is going towards the victims in Valencia. There'll be multiple fundraising efforts over the course of the weekend as well. And yeah, your title decider. We are getting a sporting finale to this championship. It will be in Barcelona. And we will report it, of course, like we always do on this show in a couple of weeks' time. Just to let you know what the situation is over there. We've also got to talk about Sepang, the penultimate round of this championship, because, oh boy, if you ever want an example of how topsy-turvy a weekend can get, this was the one.
Oh boy, yeah, this was arguably the sprint that left us with one last twist in the tale for this MotoGP championship season. And the story of the Mishima Bozo gene, as we like to say. First, Francesco Bagnaia qualified on pole position with an astonishing lap record trick. Dog, this lap record, you know that moment in the History of the Seattle Mariners documentary by John Boyes, Alex Rubenstein, and Secret
Mix, yes,
where they talk about the 116 win Seattle Mariners from 2001. And they go,
yeah.
Ah, shit. That was that qualifying session, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's the moment when they suddenly have the 113 win season, and then the picture zooms out and John goes, Alex, what the fuck was that?
That was, I threw everything at the kitchen sink at him. He went out back and got the bathtub.
Yeah, that was a lap that was 1.1 seconds faster than the previous lap record. It was a lap that was faster than the unofficial lap record that they set in testing with all the rubber down already from earlier in the year. It was the fastest ever lap recorded at Sepang on two wheels. Period.
You know,
I hate these bikes, but that is a marvel of motorcycle engineering and riding talent.
They push the two-wheel world forward. You know, it's funny. Martin sets that 156.5. And we're like, damn, yeah, he's half a second.
That's over.
He's half a second clear of everyone. We watched it. He was tying that bike into knots through the corners. He was all out. And then, thank you to Dorna. We stayed with Pecco through the whole lap. And it's fast. And it's getting faster. And then you get to sector three. He's a couple tenths up. You go, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my, one of the best dry qualifying laps you'll see.
Simply splendid. So, Drake, what did you do in the sprint?
He crushes it at the end of lap four.
Francesco Bagnaia got beat to the hole shot by Jorge Martin. Again, four laps later, Bagnaia hits the bump at turn nine, and he crashes out. And Jorge Martin, that Saturday merchant, wins the sprint and pushes the title gap out to 29 points. Now, Bagnaia did a little bit of mitigation in the Grand Prix. It was a great start between Martin and Bagnaia for the first three laps before Bagnaia broke away to win his 10th Grand Prix of the season, becoming just the sixth rider ever to take double-digit wins in a season. And, of course, Enea Bastianini would finish the distance third. They were 10 seconds back. So, Dre, what do the maths look like heading into the Racing for Valencia Grand Prix of Barcelona?
Quick note, the other five men that have won 10 MotoGP races in a season, Giacomo Agostini, Valentino Rossi, Jorge Lorenzo, Casey Stoner, and Marc Marquez.
That's great company, isn't it?
Pretty much five out of the...
Like they're not going to win the championship because of sprints. Yeah,
five out of the greatest riders to ever live.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, Casey Stoner's like the only questionable name that wouldn't be on an all-time top eight list, I would say, out of those names mentioned. Everybody else are pretty much locks. That's special company for Francesco Bagnaia. But his title is on the brink of jeopardy. The points gap is 24 going into the final weekend at Catalunya. If Jorge Martin wins the sprint, he is champion. It is that simple. He's won 7 of them already this season. If he wins the sprint or outscores Pecco Bagnaia by just 2 points in the sprint, at some point, depending on how the positions shake up, outscoring Bagnaia by 2 would win him the world championship on Saturday, basically. And, well, if you need a yardstick, Bagnaia did win, like, they did win the Grand Prix here at Barcelona last year. Martin was 4th in the sprint because he got a terrible start and never really recovered from it. But I don't think Martin will make that same mistake twice somehow. But that's the easiest maths in the book. He's got to get, Bagnaia really has to win the sprint, realistically. If he doesn't, it's probably donezo.
He needs to win everything on the table and hope that Martin has a fall. But we're back here again. Pecco Bagnaia, why are you the way that you are?
Tried too hard.
The turn 9 judgment struck again.
It's one of the nastiest corners in MotoGP. Turn 9 at Malaysia is an awful corner because it's a very hard braking zone. You come in there about 160 miles an hour. You're braking down to about 50, 55 miles an hour. It's a very slow, about 100-degree left-hander. But there's also a very nasty bump on the apex of that turn 9 that can unsettle the bike. And if you're going in hot through turn 9 at maximum speed and you hit the bump the wrong way, it's incredibly easy to tuck the front and drop it. 15 people crashed at that corner during last year's Grand Prix weekend. 12 did in 2022. It's one of the infamous, nastiest corners in MotoGP. Period. Point blank. And Bagnaia hit the bump in the wrong way on the sprint, tucked the front, went down, quite possibly championship over.
Yeah. And then, of course, that wasn't even like the worst lick of the weekend. Jack Miller got... Jack Miller... Man, how did he walk away from that?
We had a turn 1 incident where, for lack of a better way to turn it, well, turn 2 incident with the nature of Sepang's first section. We went bowling. And unfortunately, one of the pins was Jack Miller's head on another bike's rear tire. I don't know how he's okay.
It was a horrible crash to watch in real time. It was... Because, of course, Dorna has no sensitivity and still haven't learned from Pecco Bagnaia last year. It's all right. All riders are conscious. So that means it's okay to show this replay, even though we had no idea what Jack Miller's actual condition was. I'd like to point out that Jules Bianchi was deemed conscious when he, you know. Anyway, we actually saw the replay, and it is a terrifying... It's a pure racing incident, unfortunately. It's just 3-1 doesn't go into the apex of turn 2. Fabio Quartararo catches the side of Brad Binder's bike. It rips the fairing fully off Binder's motorcycle. It's like his bike's been stripped naked like a Magic Mike routine in the middle of the corner. And then Miller's caught in the squeeze. He falls off trying to avoid it. And then his head bounces off the back of Quartararo's rear wheel. And when he crashes, he's in the middle of the track, clearly in shock from the trauma, not been able to move. The sheet came out. We had the zoomed in shots. We're fearing the worst. The replay angles we got on it were kind of awkward. We couldn't quite fully make out what had happened. Thankfully, about 10 minutes later, he's confirmed to be going to the medical center, and you actually get the video shot of a fully conscious Jack Miller walking towards the medical center. He was declared fit. As you do.
He is so lucky. The last time we saw an incident like that was Taka last year at Catalunya, where, again, head on rear tire. It's in the hands of the racing gods above.
And amazingly, Alex Rins was the one who came off worse for it when that happened, because he broke his wrist. Taka walked up and got away. punched the visor off his helmet, but Taka was fine. Somehow.
You're a little closer than that.
God, it was a horrible incident. I hate turns 1 and 2 at Sepang. I've always hated that complex. It's a bottleneck. Bottleneck corners are not fun. They induce accidents by their very design. And when you're 22 bikes on a MotoGP grid going through a one-line corner complex, someone's going to have to make way. And if not, there's going to be an accident. And if there's an accident there, there's a good chance someone's getting tagged with a bike. And that's what happened here. And Jack Miller was very, very lucky.
Is this title fight between Martin and Bagnaia more over than the one between Verstappen and Norris?
No. Because the bozo gene is always there, always lurking, boiling, just beneath the surface.
King of the Iron Fist tournament.
However, realistically, Martin can just follow him home. And he would be smart to do so. That's not what he did in the race in Sepang, where those two had they were doing a Mark and Rossi 2015 reenactment for the first four laps.
That's exactly what I called it. In real time, watching it, I was like, I said to Cam, who was watching it with me, I said, Cam, am I the only one getting Sepang 2015 vibes off this?
It's like a chill went through the air in the call. Because that was those two at absolutely 100% maximum aggression, maximum take every chance. And they were leaning on each other hard. I mean, we saw it the first start attempt. Pecco gets the start and he dangles his leg out in front of Martin to disrupt his braking. He was willing to sacrifice a leg to make sure he got to turn one first.
Because Bagnaia at that point had pretty much admitted it's win or nothing mode. He said to himself, I have to lead out of turn one. I have to lead out of turn one. I have to take control of this race and I will go to that length in order to do it. Now, don't get me wrong. I'll give Bagnaia this definition of a clean rider. Never had a dirty incident in his life. He's a very, very clean, very fair racer. I don't think I've ever seen Bagnaia step over that line into what I would call dirty tactics. That's the nearest he's gotten to that point, and even then it was fine. It was a relatively clean move. It was aggressive, but that's the point. Pecco is aggressive, but never steps over that line into dangerous. Mm-hmm. And that, to be fair, that's the same for Jorge Martin. They're both very similar. In fact, if anything, I think a lot of people are actually quite mad about this title fight and the fact that these two don't hate each other and they race each other with tremendous respect, because the first three laps of this race were some of the best racing you'll see all season. Incredible violence.
Pure violence. And of course, that's all we got. After that complete procession, Bagnaia took the fuck off.
Yeah, after lap three, lap four comes, Bagnaia rips off a 0.6 of a second advantage, and that was it. Never looked back. He was 3 seconds clear at a certain point. Jorge Martin was on a medium, he was on a harder compound tire than Bagnaia was on the front. He tried late on to go for one last big push to try and get back up to Bagnaia. I think it was about 2.2 seconds back. He got the gap down to about 1.5, and then he almost lost the front at turn nine. Very nearly dropped it. And I think that's what spooked Martin into saying, you know what? No.
I'm cool with it. I'm cooling, bro.
I'm taking my 20 and I'm going home.
Yeah.
Right decision, Jorge. Right decision.
Yeah, we were about to get a double bozo swing in the same weekend. But he stopped it. And I mean, if he's smart, it's done, right? If he's smart, he follows him home. There's nothing.
Just don't crash.
It doesn't matter how bad Pecco beats your ass. The win is worth the same amount, whether it's winning by 20 seconds or two.
Jorge Martin has more than enough skill and more than enough pace to finish in second comfortably pretty much every weekend.
And those two in fact, a league of their own. This race showed it perhaps greater than any other this year, Dre.
Yeah. Jorge Martin has finished in second 16 times this season between Grand Prix and the sprint. He likes silver. There's nothing wrong with silver. It's a good medal. Looks nice around the neck. Trust me, I know. So there's nothing wrong with Silva. He can win you championships, and it has likely done that for Martin this year. He's raised his floor to the point where he's forced Bagnaia into making mistakes on Saturdays, and that, in my opinion, is likely where this championship would have been won. Because if you look at the scoreboard, Francesco Bagnaia is 48 points worse than Martin this season. On Saturday.
He's actually third in the sprint running now with that crash.
Mark Marquez has now scored more points in sprints this year than Bagnaia has. And Marquez's sprints have not been great this year.
They're either the most amazing thing you've ever seen or a complete catastrophe.
Yeah. Very much so.
Like his Sunday race where it was really, really good until it wasn't. Death taxes, Ducati tucks the front.
Is there anything more MotoGP than that this year, where it's just, hey, we have a flash of a good race, and then we get everything that's wrong with MotoGP with a complete procession where there was virtually no action on track for 90%? People were calling this the greatest fight in MotoGP history, and I'm like, we've been watching the same race.
Those people started watching 3 years ago. Pipe the hell down. The only action we seem to get for the remainder of this race is Johan Zarco doing...
Zarco trying and Pedro Acosta trying to get past Alex Marquez.
Yeah. Fighting with Bez as well. Not a great weekend for the GP23s after the sprint. Going to be real with him.
Nope.
Not great.
And Marquez was running a comfortable third and he tucked the front at the final corner and crashed. Another quite bad crash spot at Sepang is the final corner. Very easy to tuck the front there as well. Bastini did it in the sprint. Marquez did it in the Grand Prix. Unfortunate. But yeah, that Sepang, it doesn't produce great racing, unfortunately. It produces very spaced out, very methodical kind of racing, but not necessarily back and forth encounters. That first three lap skirmish, shall we say, was about as good as it got, unfortunately. The rest of the race was a complete watch it on YouTube procession, essentially. You didn't miss anything, really, on that one.
David Alonso's pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
David Alonso is still him. It was a very subdued celebration this weekend for obvious, understandable reasons. As I mentioned before, the Aspar team are based in Valencia, so it was kind of a somber race weekend for them because obviously still very emotionally, very, very much on edge. David Alonso has won 13 Moto3 races this season.
Pretty good.
13. 13 out of 19.
Pretty good.
That's fucking insane. He's now got two more wins than anyone has ever scored in a lightweight class world championship season by two.
It's six on the bounce as well.
Yeah, it is six in a row. Again, the last time somebody got six in a row in the lightweight class was Valentino Rossi in 1997. That was the last time somebody in the lightweight class bike won six straight. No one's got an answer for it.
Whatever happened to him? All I know is that he's Luca Marini's half-brother.
Pretty good at bikes. Pretty good, turns out, you know.
Kicked a guy that one time.
That was pretty fun. Yeah, kicked the guy one time, right in the side pod. Basically, you know, an emotional weekend. David Alonso also gave his win bonus in full to the victims of Valencia, which was a very nice and classy touch of him, as did Jorge Martin when he won the sprint, which was, again, very cool. Very nice. Good weekend for Aspar and John. They also got Ezan Guevara on the Moto2 podium as well. Remember him? Remember when he won a Moto3 world title?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, I did too. Turns out he came good at Sepang and got his first. They would have actually probably got two bikes on the podium if it wasn't for the fact that Jake Dixon was running third and then his bike glitched and told him there was one lap too little in the race itself. He eased off the throttle on the final lap thinking the race was over. He had one lap left. We got an accidental Jacobellis. Oh, man alive. We got an Aleix. And this one was completely by accident. And it was a technical glitch because the dashboard said told him the race was over.
Oh, for God's sake. Come on, man.
Yeah, it wasn't his fault. He read his dash, said the race was done. I was like, no, because he realized when Guevara pulled past him at full race, he was like, oh, no.
You see, he did it wrong. He should have been listening for the music to get faster on the final lap.
You bastard.
man, well, that is rot. That is some rotten luck.
It is some rotten luck. Sedicino Vietti would go on to win that race. So good for him on that one. Iagura and still in post-championship drunkenness mode by crashing that with seven laps to go. He's all champion now, who cares? Job's finished. Literally, job's finished. Like, peak World Series style, job has finished. It is over. As mentioned, MotoGP's final round will be at Valencia, at Catalunya in a couple of weeks' time, November the 15th to 17th. It's, as I mentioned, Jorge Martin up by 24 points. It's pretty much in the bag on this one, barring the screaming. Bagnaia just has to win and hope, really. He has to pray for a miracle on this one to have any real shot at all. All he can do is try. Could you imagine a situation where someone's got 11 MotoGP wins in a season? I think something only like three men have ever done.
Well, you see, Sunday Man is now Sunday Merchant, don't you see?
He could have an 11-win season and not win the world championship.
In NASCAR, that's just every other year.
I hate it here. I fucking hate it here. Oh, I'm disgusted. Me too.
I hate it here. It's awful. It's terrible. But hey, you play the format, not the man. And the Saturdays is where it's gone away for him. And that's really unfortunate. But that's how this goes sometimes, unfortunately. And yeah, people are saying this is an all-time great season from Bagnaia, to which I say to you, congratulations to the 2016 Golden State Warriors.
Don't mean a thing without a ring.
It's great that you won 73 games. Too bad you lost.
So, was that sprint win LeBron blocking Iguodala?
Yeah. Blocked by James! Etc.
Good for this moment for when he inevitably comes back from that 20-point deficit.
Jorge Martin, if you drop this bike in the Grand Prix on Sunday, I swear to God, I'm going to be so incensed.
There will never be another opportunity to bring the number one over to Aprilia.
In fact, here's what I'll do. If Jorge Martin blows this championship, I will buy the racist t-shirt they've just put out on their merchandise store that says satellite teams can't win championships.
Oh baby, we got a Motorsport 101 guarantee.
I will wear that shirt on this show.
I'd be insulted if you didn't.
You have a bet? You've heard it here first. You know me. I'm
guarantee.
It's a Charles Barkley, Dre Harrison guarantee. Martin, if you blow this, I swear to God, I will find you.
On one hand, if he blows this, I'm out another bet on the year. On the other hand,
what did you wager out of this, Cameron Buckley?
At the start of the season, I said Mark would win the title. Third's all right. This is how it feels to be the bronze medal. Everyone I know and love is dead.
And to be fair, I backed Bagnaia for the three-peat, so I'm probably out of this one too.
On one hand, I would lose this.
We are.
On the other hand, yeah, it would be so fucking funny.
We are going to be Homer Simpson and Ned Flanders both mowing each other's lawns in dresses. That's what's going to happen here.
How about a donation to each other's charity of choice if we both catch the L?
Okay. I'll do that. Yeah,
There we go. We're both catching the L for a good cause.
I would say 25 of your favorite currency, but you've taken a bit of a blow today for obvious reasons.
Get ready to learn inflation, buddy.
Indeed.
I thought the inflation was supposed to stop and our groceries were supposed to be 20% cheaper. Bookmark this in case it doesn't happen. It's likely not to happen. We're Motorsport 101 at motorsport101.com and many other fine and not so fine social media platforms. Many of them are not so fine. Let's be real. But you got us on our website. That's where we write stuff. That's where you find all the podcast episodes.
Yep, they're all there, including our social media, including our Patreon page, patreon.com/motorsport101. You can back us at the $5 level, and you can get early access to all of our content. You can back us at the $10 level to get in the supporters club of our Discord server and listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded. I'm having a look at my Patreon page because we had two brand new backers come through this week. Andrew Mayer and Jake Albee, thank you so much for supporting us on Patreon. Very, very, very much thanks to you. You guys are fantastic. Welcome aboard. Glad you could join us. Thank you so much for continuing to support the show. We'll be back next week. We'll actually be back in a week's time. We'll take it a week off because there is no major motorsport this weekend besides NASCAR's Championship Decider in Phoenix this weekend. So we'll be taking a little week off. And we'll be back in a week and a half's time or so for Formula One's, it'll be MotoGP's Grand Prix of Valencia. We'll be back-to-back MotoGP episodes to wrap up the year. Their season decider at Catalunya. We'll be back for that, maybe in some fancy and awkward T-shirts. But, as RJ pointed out in chat as well, Super Formula finales this season as well. Quick, give us a rundown, RJ.
Simple six drivers go into the weekend with a mathematical chance at the championship. Toyota Shosu Boy driving for times is the prohibitive favorite going into the weekend with a 14.5-point lead. If he gets 9 points in the first race of this doubleheader weekend across qualifying and the race, he is champion for the first time in his career. But he did not finish at the points when they raced in Suzuka to start the season. So the advantage might belong to either Tadasuke Makino, who is second in points, or two-time series champion Tomoki Nojiri, who is third in points. This is also the final single seater race weekend for Naoki Yamamoto, the three-time series champion. You may also see Ayumu Iwasa. He is in that field as well. Both races are going to be on the SF Go app and on motorsport.tv. It's worth checking out, even if Teo Porcher isn't there anymore, or Nick DeVries. Or Nolan Siegel. He was supposed to be there.
We'll have to wait and see. Do check that out if you get a chance as well. It's good motorsport. Go watch it. Until next time, I've been Dre Harrison, they've been RJ O'Connell and Cameron Buckley. We'll see you next time for the MotoGP Championship Decider. Bozo be damned. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.